If anything needs a parental advisory, it's this music from the early 90s. And that's pretty much all we can play of Two Live Crew. Their music was so offensive, so sexually explicit, that it eventually became the subject of an obscenity case that made its way through some of the highest courts in this country. The man at the center of it all was Luther Campbell, a.k.a. Luke Skywalker. That was his stage name and the alter ego that helped make Two Live Crew one of the most legendary and notorious rap groups. Campbell has written a new memoir about his life and that time in the music industry. He begins his story, though, in Miami, in a neighborhood called Liberty City. That's where this man, who is famous for lyrics I cannot read without cringing, grew up listening to some surprising music.
You know, all I heard was Burt Bacharach over the weekend. You know, early in the morning, you got Burt Bacharach playing, you know, and then late in the afternoon when my mama and her friends get some drinks in them, then you heard Millie Jackson.
Can you walk me through? I'm curious because you write in the book about how much you did love to put on a good party. And you were the DJ at these in this really vibrant music scene in Miami at the time. And you and your friends were really successful at turning this into a business. But can you walk me through what that felt like when you're in a moment, you're in a crowd, and you can feel the vibe and you know exactly the song you're going to play to take it to the next level?
Man, and it's always to this day an amazing moment when you're able to just turn people on. You know, and me being the star of the show, I would DJ last. So everybody would have played every hot song at least two times. So when I came on, I had to be a little more creative. So I would go and get an old song like Herbie Hancock, Rocket. You know, I had to basically separate myself from the average DJ.
What made you really successful in that world was your ability to break artists, to anticipate people's tastes, and to find people who hadn't really popped yet. When you look back at that, that's kind of risky. Did you ever have room for self-doubt, or you just had to say, nope, I'm going with my gut. This person's going to be a star?
When I looked into the Cradle Records, I did not want to be the guy just played the music that was on the radio. Forget about these records with the name labels on here. I'm going to look for the records with generic labels, the you know, not the nationally branded artists. And I said, look, I'm going to just think about the actual song and the songs that I'm going to stand behind. And so, I mean, people were looking at me crazy when I discovered Pitbull. They were like, Pitbull? Who is this guy? You know, we already got. Thank you. a Cuban rapper? They were like, are you serious?
Campbell's DJ business grew. He discovered this group called Two Live Crew, and he brought them to South Florida. He went from being their promoter to joining the group as a performer. At the time, rap groups like Run-DMC and N.W.A. were breaking into the mainstream, and Two Live Crew was looking to stand out.
You know, I sat there, and if we're going to compete with these guys, you know, we don't have the same budget that they have, so what we're going to have to do is do something different. What my mom and them used to listen to, you know, this would set us apart from everybody else. Let's do comedy. Let's sample some of these comedians, some of these famous comedians like Red Fox and Leroy Skidder and Aunt Esther. And we'll keep this bass music, this up-tempo, this Miami-style music. You know, we're going to do dance. And that set us apart from everybody else.
That might not be the first thing that people identify with Two Live Crew, comedy.
No. You know, when people heard the music, it was shocking. At first,
and that might be a word that people would associate sooner than comedy. Shocking, yeah.
Exactly. They were shocked.
So
I can understand that now.
So in the beginning, did you not anticipate that the music and the explicit nature of it, because it was really explicit, did you not anticipate that it would stir up such ire, such anger in parts of the country?
No, I did not at all. I mean, you know, even with the videos, I'm like, I'm a product of my environment. My environment is Miami, Florida. This is where I live. We go on the beach on Sundays, and everybody running around here half naked. So my videos are going to look like Miami. I'm not going to look like I'm in New York, you know. So when I did get a call from a PTA group out of Alabama and said, our kids are getting this, I had no problem creating that parental advisory sticker and put it on the record and start doing two versions of the songs.
I remember being in music stores and seeing those CDs with those parental sticker labels. And
oh, so you got a couple of... You got,
no, I couldn't
ahead,
buy
can
them.
But, you can tell.
You know, when you're little and you see the sticker, then you want to buy it, right? Because you're thinking, oh, that must, you know, that's like off limits.
You know, I had to do creative things. Again, it's this little guy. I mean, I'm doing this on my own. I'm like, okay, when Michael Jackson record comes out in the record store, I had to have some girls with some big old butts because I knew I wasn't going to get the same visibility in that record store as Michael Jackson.
So you knew the sex would sell. You knew that.
Of course. I looked at the things that Larry Flint was doing, what Hugh Hefner was doing. These things were already a part of society at the time.
The calls for you to tone down your music and to even, you know, calls for record stores to get rid of your albums altogether, those started getting louder and lawsuits were filed. You kind of doubled down. You, instead of caving, you made As Nasty As We Want to Be, which ultimately landed you in court under obscenity charges.
As things went on, you know, just like you said, I did double down. I was basically saying, hey, look, I'm going to just fight the system. You know, at that time, I feel like it was racially motivated. Mm-hmm. I'm a black man. Everybody else is doing this. I own my own black record company. They're only coming after me because of this right here. So why should I not fight this? I got to take on this fight.
You won this significant free speech ruling that ended up affecting the rest of the music industry. But did you feel like you had the support of the industry when that ruling came down? And did you feel that you had been vindicated?
Let me tell you, I felt like the only person who was with me was me and the people of my community, the people of Liberty City. That was it. And that's why I always came back home, even when I became more and more successful. You know, because, you know, you had rap groups in the height of it all going on TV. You know, from Salt and Pepper to Kid and Play, talking bad about, you know, what we were doing on records. And, you know, you had the Russell Simmons of the world. You know, all these same people who you would have thought that would have supported us coming after the music.
After the trial, you write in the book that you took your onstage persona to this completely different level because you started getting really into sex films and as a producer, and there was a really strong sexual element to your live shows. When did you decide, because you did decide to shed that persona, how did you make that decision?
I had to basically take a look at myself. You know, I said, okay, as I won every battle, you know, I won the parody case, you know, I went to jail for music. At one point I just said, look, I got to grow up. You know, I want to focus more about being an executive. And then at some point in my life, being a father, and then I could get on with the rest of my life.
Your life is really different now. You write in the book, you went home to Liberty City, you set up an organization to help kids and mentor them through football. Pretty different life than you were leading as a music star and producer. You've got kids. How much do they know about your past, your music? Do they listen to your albums? Do you let them?
I mean, I got kids now 24 and 25 years old. And
they know.
Yeah, they know. Were they fans? No. To say any one of my kids, you know, oh, Dad, I like this song here, man. You really did it on I Wanna Rock. You know, that Raise the Roof? Oh, man. You know, no. So none of my kids want to be involved in none of the music, you know. We're too live, too black, too strong, doing the right thing and not the wrong. So listen up, y'all, to what we say. We won't be banned in the USA.
Luther Campbell, formerly of Two Live Crew. He spoke to us from the member station of WLRN in Miami. His memoir is called The Book of Luke, My Fight for Truth, Justice, and Liberty City. It's been so fun to talk with you. Thanks so much for taking the time, Luther.
Hey, it's great to talk to you as well. And you have a great rest of the summer.